I always like to keep my favorite snack handy. Need a little excitement? Step into a Slim Jim. Oh, yeah!
Everybody, welcome to the Geek Generation, episode 37. I know I always say we have a jam-packed episode, but that could never be more legit than it is today, because we have so much stuff to go over. We have our geek outs and freak outs. We have a new segment on some web finds. We have the news block. We have our look at the TV upfronts, as well as stepping back into the spoiler room, which hasn't been touched in a while, because we have a discussion of Thor coming up at the end of the episode. So we're going to jump right in. Brian, how you doing?
I was just waiting to say 37 in a row, but I didn't get my chance. So now I have to say it. Now it doesn't sound as funny because it's episode 37. But never mind. Continue.
I'm stepping all over your jokes. I apologize.
No. No worries.
We need to have writers' meetings before these, apparently.
All right, let's go
right into geek outs then.
Yay!
What are you geeking out over this week, Brian?
It's a slow week for geek outs, but I'm hearing the first reviews for X-Men First Class are starting to come in a little bit, spoiler-free reviews, and it's getting surprisingly good reviews, and I thought this movie was going to be pretty terrible, because I don't know if you saw the poster of the one of Beast, and it looks like something, you know, someone made in their basement. It's like
yeah.
really bad, and but apparently the storyline and the characters are really well done, so now I'm kind of looking forward to it. I really wasn't, but this is kind of also a freak out, and the same thing is that there's been no promotion whatsoever from Marvel, which makes me think they like want no part of it, because, you know, I know it's not a Marvel Studios film, but, you know, Thor, every single comic book that they published in the last 2 months had a Thor poster, you know, or promoting Thor. There's been nothing promoting X-Men anywhere in anything. And, you know, they've been not really, you know, pushing it. And it's sort of just like Fox that's been pushing it. So it makes me wonder if Marvel, like, doesn't want any, like, you know, anyone to see it anyways. You know, yeah. It's coming out in a week and no one's really been talking about it, really. Like, it's kind of going under the radar. And I don't know. But, I mean, I still think, you know, the thing's going to be people are going to like, where's Wolverine? You know, it's I don't know. It's gonna be interesting, but yeah. So I'm hoping it's a good movie. That's kind of my that's my first geek out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. The more and more I see, like we talked about the character trailers before, I am excited for it, and I'm sure that's gonna warrant a spoiler room discussion as well.
There's gonna be so many this year.
I know, right?
It's like every other week there's a new comic book movie. But yeah. My other geek out is kind of a stupid one, but I just happened to go into a Toys R Us the other day, and I rarely go into Toys R Us anymore, but they have the coolest toys out this summer between the Green Lantern toys, the Captain America toys, and the Transformers 3 toys. Like, it's bombarding, like, all movie toys everywhere, and, you know, I saw a bunch of little kids, like, freaking out over Green Lantern figures, and I don't think they knew who Green Lantern was, but they just liked, like, the weird-looking aliens, and, you know, like, they all come with a ring, and a light-up ring, and they have, like, you know, the cool green constructs, and I just thought that was a really cool thing. And no one really was interested in the Captain America figures or the Transformer figures as much, but I think Green Lantern may win the toy war, at least, because it seemed like kids were really digging. They had like a giant like display of them, and people were going like, and they had some wicked cool like adult collector movie masters, as they call them, of Green Lantern stuff, which was kind of cool. And
nice.
If you buy all 12, you can form Parallax, which is like looks like the size of like a giant thing. So I don't know.
I'm tempted to run into Toys R Us and buy myself a toy Mjolnir for my movie shelf.
Yes. But yeah, those are pretty much my only geek outs. I haven't had much time this week to even think about geek outs. There hasn't been much going on geeking out really. After the Smallville finale, I'm all burnt out.
Right. I was going to say my first Smallville was my first geek out this week, and I'm not going to get into it extensively because we already did that. So exactly. I just want to remind people that if you are a Smallville fan and you did watch everything and you watched the finale and everything, go back and listen to the Graphically Speaking bonus episode of Smallville, which goes through seasons 1 through 10, except for like the last two episodes and the finale. Then hop from that into the Geek Generation bonus episode that went up yesterday that has Brian and I's discussion of those last two episodes, as well as an in-depth discussion of the finale. And that episode's pretty much as long as the finale. So,
with my tangents, yes, exactly.
Lots to love, though. I hope everyone enjoys those. My other geek out this week is actually a pretty quick one, but you know I love my celebrity Twitter interactions.
Yes.
I tweeted out a picture of a bunch of the ladies from the CW upfronts, two of them being Lindsay Fonseca, who I love because she signed a picture for me at New York Comic Con last year. And she's just awesome in a lot of the different things she's in, as well as Jamie King, who's probably one of the favorites here at the Geek Generation because she's been a supporter and done little things here and there to help out the site as we've been moving along. So I tweeted out this picture of them both from the CW upfronts and, of course, referenced their Twitter names in my tweet. And within a matter of minutes, Jamie King retweeted that photo to all of her followers. So one more time helping out the Geek Generation, as she seems to do a lot for us. So thanks if she ever decides to listen to an episode.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, those are my only geek outs this week, so let's take a look at freakouts.
Oh, freakout!
What do you got?
This is a pretty wrestling-heavy freakout, but obviously, you know, the death of Macho Man Randy Savage kind of hit me pretty hard. And last night I recorded Graphically Speaking. It's not really comic book related, but it's a bonus episode of Graphically Speaking that will go up sometime next week where, you know, I kind of a friend of mine discussed, you know, the legacy of Macho Man and, you know, what he meant to us. And, you know, we got a bunch of feedback from other people, too, of what he meant to them. So in their memory. So it kind of just hit me. And it's just like, you know, you don't realize how much he meant until you know, he's gone. And, you know, it's still a huge, like, huge loss to me. And I'm just kind of interested seeing if they're going to do any sort of tribute tomorrow night, which I don't know. I would hope they would. But as we covered in the podcast, there's some lingering things and rumors supposedly with WWE and him that, you know, never really got confirmed or denied. So I don't know if they're actually going to do anything or not. So, but other than that, my other two freakouts is my laughing at TNA Wrestling, who has once again decided to rebrand themselves as Impact Wrestling. We mean wrestling, or we respect wrestling, or whatever the hell. We want wrestling, whatever the hell their new catchphrase is. We are wrestling. There's so many. I heard, you know, radio ads, I saw TV ads everywhere. They did a really good job promoting it, and the ratings came in, and no one watched it. It was still because they didn't get one additional viewer. And I read the results of the first show, and it didn't look like there was any good wrestling. It looked like lots of old guys talking still. So I don't get it. So it's like you can rebrand your show as many times as you want, but if it's still shit, it's gonna be shit. So and
two quick things about that.
Yeah.
So they're no longer calling themselves TNA Wrestling. It's Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, they did a whole storyline where, you know, in the storylines they changed it, but yeah, they did a whole new logo, whole new design, whole new ad things. You know, their website's redesigned. They're still using the TNA name slightly, but the show is now renamed Impact Wrestling. Every time they talk about it themselves, it's Impact Wrestling, because basically they're trying to attack WWE now because they took the wrestling out of WWE's name.
Oh, okay.
But it's a stupid thing because, you know, if that was me, you know, I would do like a Ring of Honor type product where they're at, but instead they're just bringing out old guys talking, and, you know, I didn't see any long, awesome wrestling matches. So it seems like it's just trying to, again, be WWE light and not trying to be anything different. So I just kind of laughed at them for. And then, again, in addition, yesterday, Eric Bischoff posted this on his Twitter and Facebook, which was a video of him in an airplane, and you hear a voice talking, and it's Bill Goldberg, and he spins around and goes, "Look who I'm here with," and it shows Bischoff with a smirk on his face. So it looks like they're bringing yet another cast off from the old WCW days in Bill Goldberg, so I'm sure that will bring in the ratings. I'm sorry,
I'm afraid with this whole new Impact Wrestling thing that I'll never be able to go back to my old gimmick name now.
Oh, no, I didn't even think of that. You know what? I didn't even think of that until I just
For those who don't know, my original name in wrestling was Rob Impact, so I'm a little fearful that he will never be alive again.
I totally didn't even hit me until, oh my god, yeah. It's all Impact Wrestling. I mean, it's all over the place, and it's sad, but yeah. I mean,
maybe that, or I'll actually get like 1,000 Google hits every time I have a match.
Exactly, run with it. Ride the coattails of Impact Rust. But yeah, so I don't know. They're trying to rebrand themselves, but it sounds stupid. And it's like, yes, let's bring in another guy who's ancient and never is not going to bring any new. You know, they need to concentrate on their young guys, and you know, they're still not the same writer's still writing it. Until they fire Vince Russo, nothing's going to change. But that's my little rant. So.
All right, well, I have a couple freakouts too. One of which is also the Macho Man thing. Granted, I wasn't allowed to watch wrestling back in the day, so my 80s knowledge isn't what it should be.
Shame on
but
you.
I know, right? No, you're right. One of the things I do remember, though, when I did sneak over to my neighbor's house and catch it every now and then, mm-hmm. is the thing that still sticks with me to this day is the clip of Jake the Snake's snake, like, kind of just attacking Macho Man,
yes.
and biting the shit out of him.
When he was tied in the ropes, and yeah, exactly. That was a major thing when I was a kid. Yeah, I remember that too. When it was like, and later on, I found out that it wasn't fake. Because as a kid, I'm like, there's like I believed it, but then later on, I'm like, oh, that must have been a fake snake. But no, they actually like it legit bit him, and it wasn't supposed to. And that's why it's like all bloody. His arm's all bloody and shit afterward.
Yeah,
yeah. Kind of crazy.
That was crazy. I know. I remember that still to this day.
Yeah.
My next freak out is actually for the people who watch The Big Bang Theory. The series finale aired recently, and it's been going really well, but I'm going to throw a spoiler alert here. In case people haven't seen it, the finale of The Big Bang Theory involved Penny getting drunk and Raj getting drunk, and they ended up sleeping together.
Seriously?
Yeah, and I hate that crap because when I don't know how many times they're gonna do like poor decisions as a result of alcohol consumption on TV shows, but I was just like, "Are you kidding me? This is bullshit."
It's lazy writing. Not even the whole. And then they can. Oh no, I don't even want to.
I saw it coming a mile away too, and yeah. I was like, "They're not really gonna do this, are they? They're better than this." But then they did it.
That's just lazy writing. I hate that. You know, if you want an anti-alcohol episode of something, watch the Buffy episode from season 4 called Beer Bad. And the entire episode is Buffy. Whenever she drinks alcohol, she turns into a Neanderthal. And basically, it's basically just a giant mockery of people who drink. It's pretty funny, actually. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
I'll check that out. Absolutely. My other one is kind of a personal one. And I'm not going to go out and say names here, but I'm having some major issues with a lot of people talking behind my back, and it's pissing me off. So to all the people who've been going to Brian behind my back and talking shit about me, quit your bitching. Brian's got his own stuff to deal with. He doesn't have to deal with your stuff too. And if you got a problem with me, talk to me about it, because that's the only way you're going to get any feedback whatsoever. So I'm going to say about that. Yeah.
I was going to say, and you took it out of my mouth. Shit just got real.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into it any more than that. I had a whole rant planned out, but then I was like, I'm not going to bring the episode down with just a whole bunch of crap. And I'm not going to name names. The people know who they are. And if they have a problem with me, they can talk to me. And that's the only way it's going to get resolved. So that's that.
Okay. Look, we both said a lot of things that you're going to regret. But I think we can put our differences behind us. For science, you monster.
So let's move into a brand new segment, which I've been thinking about doing this one for a while, because every now and then my geek outs go to like viral videos and stuff like that. So we're going to debut the brand new web finds.
Johnny bit me.
Had your kids, had your wife.
Double rainbow all the way.
Is this real life? Johnny, that really hurt!
So you can run and tell that!
I can't help laughing every time I hear that baby laugh still.
I was laughing while you were playing it. It does any. Just the. Oh, it's fantastic. Bedroom Intruder is still my favorite, and Double Rainbow.
So I have some things that I found on the web. And one of them is related to Portal, because Portal 2 has been really big lately. So there's a whole bunch of stuff coming out on that. One person created a turret from Portal 2, and or Portal. You could say either one, really.
Yeah.
And it's a plushie, but the coolest thing about it is that it is motion and lift activated. So when you put your hand in front of it, it will say one of the quotes from the game. If you pick it up, it'll say different quotes based on the fact that you're lifting it. And if you tip it over, it will even say different quotes, like when you kill the turrets in the game, like,
I don't hate you.
So it was just a really ingenious thing. And I thought it was awesome. And the fact that it's a plushie, like, you almost want them to mass produce this now. Because yeah. It was really cool. The other one, I'll put links to all this stuff on the show notes too, so people can see them, because there are videos or photos attached to either one. The other one is also a turret, but this one, instead of it being a plushie, it is a 3 foot tall, made out of like plastic. You can see all the pieces were molded and everything and painted, and it has a working laser eye and motion sensor, and also says things similar to the plushie one from the game. So there's some ingenious things being made out there, and people's creativity and just ingenuity amazes me constantly with this kind of stuff.
Mm.
So that's very cool.
Very cool.
The other web find I have this week is, I don't know if you're familiar with Borderlands, the game from Gearbox.
Yep.
Okay. There's a character in Borderlands called Claptrap, and he's one of the fan favorite characters in there. And a Borderlands fan named Ben apparently met his girlfriend Tor by playing co-op in the game. That's how they first met each other and started dating.
Nice.
So when it came time to pop the question, he contacted Gearbox and let them know how they met and if they could do anything to help him out. And they created a video clip that they gave to Ben, which he then used to propose to his girlfriend Tora. So I'll play the audio from that, and if people want to watch the video later, they can check it out.
Well, bitches, what are we doing?
The Ben Ambrosio video. And
action. Who's Ben Ambrosio?
A fan of ours. He's going to ask his girlfriend to take things to the next level.
What, like
Can you just say that?
Like, cut that off.
I don't have time for this. I've got better things to do than help some schmuck hit on his main squeeze.
Claptrap, Claptrap. This is a picture of her. Ben Ambrosio video, take 3.
All right, what's this chick's name then?
Tisha.
All right. Hello, Tisha. You...
But she goes by Tora.
Are you kidding me? Does this broad even know what a nickname is?
Jesus, will you just say the line, Claptrap? Claptrap.
Who's Claptrap? I go by Daryl.
Stop insulting our fans! Take 4.
Hello, Tora. Today, Ben would like to tell you something very important. He has herpes.
Cut.
Tora, did you know that robots are physically incapable of having STDs? Think about it.
I said cut!
Tora, I have 2 words for you. Skaggy style.
Fucking cut!
Tora, you and Ben have been together for a while, and he has something he'd like to ask you.
So at this point, a sign comes up that says, "Will you marry me?" which is very cool. Meanwhile, Claptrap's holding up a little sign that says, "Say no."
It's fantastic.
So I just thought it was awesome that Gearbox did something like that to help out 2 of their big fans. And there is a reaction video to that as well, which I'll also post in the show notes. I'm not going to play the audio here, but you can watch them watching the video.
That's awesome.
And actually see him get down on one knee and all that stuff. It was really cool. I just thought that was awesome.
So wait, did she say yes now?
She did, actually. Yeah, she did. Sure. Well, I mean, after that, how can you not? Yeah. Isn't that what every girl imagines?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so... we got a lot of news, so let's jump right into it. Top story this week. PlayStation Network has come back online, and with it, some benefits from Sony to try and make up for the time lost. Sony is partnering with Debix to provide 12 months of free identity theft protection through their All Clear ID program. Existing users should have received details on this through their PSN registered email. That's one thing, but it goes on. So far, we've missed 3 regularly scheduled PlayStation Store updates. To get back on track, the storefront will receive updates multiple times per week once functionality has been restored. So we're going to see a few more. They're going to go off schedule for a little while until they catch up and get those 3 updates out there, so that's good. Finally, this is the one people seem to be really excited about. A welcome back program will be implemented for all existing registered users who live in the US and Canada. Customers can select 2 PS3 games from the following list, which will be available for 30 days once store service is restored and can be kept forever. Those 5 games to choose from are Dead Nation, Infamous, Little Big Planet, Super Stardust HD, Wipeout HD, and Fury. PSP owners will be eligible to download 2 PSP games from the following list with the same conditions, those being Little Big Planet, the PSP version of course, Mod Nation Racers, Pursuit Force, and Killzone Liberation. A selection of On Us rental movies will be available over one weekend where video service is available. Those titles have yet to be announced. 30 days free PlayStation Plus membership for non-Plus subscribers will be available. 60 additional days of free subscription for Plus subscribers. And for people that use Home, 100 free virtual items will be made available. So Sony's rolling it out as a big apology.
Yeah, well, I think they kind of had to. I mean, no offense, but they kind of... This was the biggest blow that they've ever had in the history of, you know, their video game industry company, I guess you could say, you know. So, I mean, not to say that I'm excited for the thing they're offering, but I mean, you know, I actually didn't think they were going to go this above and beyond, which I'm happy about. But, yeah, I think they knew they had to do something because there's a lot of – I mean, of course, there's still people shit-talking, but, you know, they all come out of the woodwork when shit like this happens. So, you mean, oh, the PlayStation Store still isn't up yet, you know, stuff like that. So,
right.
But, yeah.
Granted, Infamous and Little Big Planet are pretty big games, even though they're fairly old, but that's a big deal to release those for free, basically, to people.
Yeah, I guess the deal, obviously, the thing was they could only release games that Sony themselves made, because obviously no company is going to want their game put out there for free because Sony's thing got hacked. So, yeah, they kind of were stuck with what they could offer. So, but I still think that you're right. If you don't have either of those games, those are two huge games that, you know... I, of course, already have Infamous, but I don't have Little Big Planet, so I may grab that. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Next, the first image of Tom Hardy as Bane is out now. And on the official site for The Dark Knight Rises, there's a weird audio file playing that sounds like chanting. By downloading the audio file and looking at the visual spectrum, it reveals the text hashtag The Fire Rises. When tweeting out that hashtag, each user's Twitter icon filled in a pixel of a larger image. That complete picture is the first image of Tom Hardy as Bane. And this is the clip that was up on Dark Knight Rises, and it sounds like just really awful. It's like weird chanting. So it doesn't sound like much, but and I'm not going to play the whole thing because it's kind of annoying. But when you do look at the visual spectrum of it, it's very cool that they kind of hid that inside there and had that hashtag to tweet out.
That's very cool.
The pixels all filling up. And yeah, we have the first image of Tom Hardy as Bane. So what did you think of it?
I thought it was fantastic. The gimp mask type thing was kind of, they did a nice job of making him look like he would fit in that, reality in the Nolan, universe, you know, he didn't look like the, you know, Batman and Robin comic booky. Oh God, you know, with the outlandishly terrible costume, but I thought it looked pretty good. I mean, you can only see his back and a little bit of the mask, and I mean, you don't but from what I saw, it looks pretty cool, and I think a lot of people are happy about it. It should be, and I guess there's gonna be more viral stuff coming. I heard through the grapevine that you know, in San Diego they're gonna be doing a big viral thing, kind of like, if you remember the year before Dark Knight came out, they did those Joker dollars at San Diego where they threw them down and they all had a secret code on them. Supposedly they're going to do something along those lines for the new movie at this year, so it should be interesting. Lots of viral stuff coming, supposedly.
Yeah, all the Batman movies, the Nolan ones, have had amazing viral marketing campaigns attached to them so far.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it looks, I did not expect to see a picture of Bane this soon. Like, that, like, kind of caught me off guard, you know. That's that, the fact that was the first thing they showed. But, you know, that's cool. That's very cool. I like it. I like it a lot.
Definitely. And the mask makes sense for what they're doing. There was a lot of criticism in Bane's design originally that he had, like, kind of a luchador mask looking on. I can understand why they went away from that.
Like, if you remember him in the animated series, he really did kind of look like a giant Mexican wrestler. So, yeah, I can understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Next story here. CBS and Warner Brothers Television have announced that Ashton Kutcher will join the cast of the hit comedy Two and a Half Men. Production on the 9th season of the Emmy Award-nominated series will begin this summer for broadcast on CBS in the fall. Quote, I can't wait to get to work with this ridiculously talented Two and a Half team, and I believe we can fill the stage with laughter that will echo in viewers' homes, said Kutcher. I can't replace Charlie Sheen, but I'm going to work my ass off to entertain the hell out of people.
Eye rolls. Multiple eye rolls while you're reading that. No, I'm joking. I fucking... Sorry for my word. Sorry, I hate Ashton Kutcher with a passion. I think he's a one-note, untalented actor who does the same shtick every single time. And as much as I hate Charlie, I don't really care about Charlie Sheen right now, I don't see this working. There's going to be a couple weeks people are going to be interested to see what happened or how they're going to explain it, and then there's going to be a huge drop-off and no one's going to care. I just don't see him. He's so like goofy and like he's gonna try to play that same like that 70s show character that he does in everything, and it's just I don't buy him being able to even slightly replace Charlie Sheen's character. You know, I wasn't a fan of the show anyways, but this is not gonna make me want to check it out.
Yeah, regardless of my feelings toward Ashton and everything that's been going on, whether or not it's gonna work, I really hope that it does work because. All the trash talking that Sheen did.
Yeah.
I've been on Chuck Lorre's side this whole time, and I really want to see the show succeed. So regardless of who they're getting to cast, it is interesting how they're going to try and make this work. I don't know what they're going to do to write out one character and write in another. So that's what I'm way more curious about.
True, true. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Next story here is one that was kind of shocking, actually. But after much back and forth with just getting a pilot underway, NBC has decided not to pick up the David A. Kelly written Wonder Woman as a series. The news comes after lackluster buzz and a network screening that went poorly. NBC Entertainment chairman Robert Greenblatt has come forward to give the reasoning behind this decision. Quote, "I hate to disappoint anybody. I know there are legions of fans of the original show," Greenblatt said. "I don't know if it's cursed or what. I just have this one experience. They made a really fine pilot and Adrian Pilecki did a fantastic job. You look at what you have, what you need, and it just didn't seem to fit in with what we were doing. We did what was best for the schedule. It does give one pause. You're almost damned if you do and damned if you don't. It's tricky." Greenblatt also mentioned that Warner Brothers TV may shop the pilot elsewhere, but whether or not anyone else picks it up remains to be seen.
Yeah, I was really shocked about this. I mean, all the, you know, the buzz, and you would think, you know, with Smallville being done, they would want some sort of DC presence on TV. And I mean, I don't know if this is true, but, you know, I can only assume that the pilot was a lot worse than anyone really knew, because I know it wouldn't have, you know, it wouldn't have fit in their schedule or whatever, but if it was a good enough show, they would have put it. I mean, let's be honest, NBC's put a lot shittier shows on, I'm sure. So, I mean, it must have been really, either really, really, really bad, or they just didn't want anything to do with comic books. But in the first place, why would they even order the pilot if they didn't want any part of it? So I don't know. It seems kind of iffy, and the fact I haven't heard it being shipped around anywhere else makes me wonder if it just was really, really terrible, and they're just gonna, it's gonna be one of those kind of things that, you know, years down the line someone will eventually get wind of it, and you'll see it on YouTube, much like that Justice League show that was supposed to be on CBS years and years and years ago, live action, which is one of the worst things ever made. But so I don't know. I've never obviously haven't seen. I've only seen the stills and, you know, a little bit of the script of what I've seen. But I mean, I don't know. It's a really weird decision. But I'm not running NBC, so I don't know what their process was. But if it was a really poor test screening or what, or if they're just, I don't know. So I don't know.
Yeah. That was a very political answer there.
Yeah. Yes, it was very. Yes.
So I'm guessing they really just didn't dig it and came out with the nicest way to say, no thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, but I think that may be the end of Wonder Woman.
I know, unfortunately. I mean, I do still want to see the pilot. I'm very curious to see it, and I'm hoping that similar to CW's Aquaman, yes, kind of got released on iTunes, they do the same thing with the Wonder Woman pilot.
You think so, just to make, you know, recoup some of the money they put into it or whatever. You think they would do that, but who knows?
Sure.
Yeah.
Last week, I gave some first details for Assassin's Creed Revelations. This week, I have some new details for you. In Revelations, you'll play as both 12th century stabber Altair and his 16th century descendant Ezio, now over 50 years old. Ezio will be looking for seals, which will allow him to access Altair's memories, similar to how Desmond used the Animus to access both Altair's and Ezio's memories. Desmond is back in the Animus, where he finds a safe mode called the Black Room. The gameplay in Desmond's mode is described as narrative-fueled puzzle sequences. The majority of the game will take place in Constantinople, which is separated into four districts: Constantine, Bayezid, Imperial, and Galata. I don't know if I'm saying those right. I'm probably not. Inside the cities, you'll be able to establish assassin's dens, a sort of expanded Borgia Tower mechanic from Brotherhood, complete various scenarios, take down the regional Templar presence, establish a den, and then upgrade the buildings in that region along with adding zip lines across the rooftops, which sounds cool. Traditional side missions have been done away with in favor of random events, such as noticing a shop owner being robbed, but also given Ezio a new item called the Hookblade, which can be used with the zip lines to speed up navigation by about 30%. The Hookblade can also be used in combat to pull in enemies and set up combos. In addition to the Hookblade, Ezio can now make up to 300 bombs using a crafting system. That's also very cool.
Very cool.
Lastly, Ubisoft Ubisoft Montreal is using a new facial capture technology called MoCam, which Game Informer calls an intriguing amalgamation of traditional animation, performance capture, and the fascinating new style of performance on display in games like L.A. Noire. And if you've seen video of the motion capture and the facial expression in L.A. Noire, it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's so realistic. It looks like you're watching a movie, like really beyond anything you've seen in video games before.
And it's really interesting to see that now we're going to finally see actual actors being portrayed in these things. They're going to have to be a lot more selective about not just creating the characters and having a voice that goes along with them, but if they're really going to be capturing facial expressions and everything, they're going to need to have people that can portray those emotions in a realistic way. So actors are going to be getting a lot more work, I would think.
This is true. I would imagine you're right. They're going to have to, you know, although I think that will also take a lot more time to actually render it to look like the, so we may be looking at longer, you know, development time too. So I don't know, but.
True. But all you aspiring actors out in LA that are just waiting tables, look into video games. That's the way to go. Next thing here, Colin Hanks and Moss, formerly Mos Def, have joined the cast of Showtime's Dexter for season 6. Hanks, who will appear in all 12 episodes, will play Travis, a highly intelligent young expert on ancient artifacts who gets linked to a series of grisly murders in Miami. If you're thinking that this immediately makes Hanks a villain in the series, think again. Showtime president David Nevins recently told TV Line about the show's coming season. "It is not about one big bad," he said. "There's one interesting story that will move through the season, and it will be cast very interestingly, but it's not exactly that one person." Moss will appear in a multi-episode story arc in which he will play brother Sam, a hardened ex-con who claims to have found religion, yet seems to continually find himself surrounded by violence. Production on season 6 begins in June in Los Angeles and will premiere on Showtime this fall.
We have to urbanize you, Rob. It's Mos Def now, or Mos Def. I have no idea. I'm joking.
Yeah, I know. I was just throwing it out there, but I have no idea how you actually say it.
I love Colin Hanks. I want to put that out there.
I love him.
One of the few people, one of the few celebrities who's actually completely like responded to me on Twitter and like gave like dialogue with me. Like, and I've loved him since he was on Roswell way back on the WB. He's a fantastic actor, and a lot of people I know just go, "Oh yeah, he just got a job because, you know, he's Tom Hanks' son," but he's an awesome dude. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, yeah, I have no doubt he broke into the business because he's Tom Hanks' son, but he's earned his keep.
Exactly. That's the thing. So yeah, he's a cool dude. Dig it.
Yeah, Dexter continues to bring in some amazing guest stars, and Colin Hanks just is another one in that long line. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Next thing here, Fox has announced that Family Guy has been renewed for a 10th season, and The Cleveland Show for a 4th season. Kevin Riley, Fox's president of entertainment, had the following to say. Quote, "For 9 seasons, our viewers have been cracked up, delighted, surprised, and at times gloriously disturbed by the mind of Seth MacFarlane, and they keep coming back for more. The Griffins and the Browns have become cornerstones of our Sunday nights, and we can't wait to find out what new adventures Seth, Mike, and Rich cook up for them next season."
Meh.
Are you watching either Family Guy or The Cleveland Show?
I've watched Family Guy in the past. I haven't watched it. I've catched an episode here and there in the past couple of years, and it's starting to turn into, you know, generic. Remember that time when blah blah blah, and you know it's
right.
It's very one note-ish, and they try to be disturbing at points, and it's like, okay, whatever, I don't get it. And sometimes it just makes absolutely no logical sense what they're doing. Cleveland Show is hit or miss as well. I've watched a couple episodes of that. Neither of them I tune into a regular basis, so I'm obviously not the audience they're looking for. But I don't know. I think Family Guy is kind of overrated. There seems to be overrated. There seems to be that like thing that it's like the funniest, you know, show of all. I have no doubt it's funnier than The Simpsons are now, because The Simpsons are just, you know, just there. But it's just not, you know, I'd rather watch South Park, which is more intellectually funny.
Right.
It's just me.
Yeah, most people look at South Park as the more toilet humor of the three, but really it is one of the smartest shows on television.
Exactly. And when they do their parodies and they're it's always something that's either topical or like, you know, like I said, intellectual, where Family Guy is just kind of like, remember that time? Let's make some random like 80s reference. Like, okay, I get it. The first couple times it was funny, but, you know, it just, I don't know. I don't get it. sometimes. I just get annoyed with it. But I do.
And that's the thing that people pick on Family Guy for, is making those random references and just kind of relying on that for their jokes.
Yeah, that's what they do. Yeah. I mean, but not. I'm not to say that I haven't laughed my ass off at certain episodes. It just depends on my state of mind. And I think the older episodes seem to be better than the newer ones that I've seen. But who knows?
Next story here. Sci-Fi is developing a spin-off of its popular Warehouse 13 dramedy series. The project from Warehouse showrunner Jack Kenny and another writer will center on the character of H.G. Wells. While it is still in the early stages and thus subject to change, the idea is to put Wells in a 1890s steampunk environment. Despite Warehouse 12's efforts to recruit her, she would remain a free agent who uses her knowledge of contemporary science to solve murders and other mysteries.
Very cool. I think sci-fi needs to get more science fiction shows, because this is not going to be a tangent. I swear, not a long tangent, but as I've known to do. But sci-fi right now, they're having a huge backlash with their fan base, basically saying that, you know, all Stargate and all their shows that people have loved on that channel have been canceled because their highest rated show now is WWE SmackDown. And if you go to any science fiction forum, people hate sci-fi right now because they feel that, you know, it's like, why is wrestling on? Why is it ruining all our shows? And so I think it's a good idea to get another science fiction show, even if it's a spinoff. It's fat, you know, try to rebuild that audience that a lot of people have just, you know, because Friday nights used to be their big science fiction night on that channel, and now it's wrestling night, which is, you know, of course, right, pissed off a lot of people.
Well, I'm sure there are people that disagree with me, but I do think Warehouse 13 is one of, if not the best shows that sci-fi has generated. And I like the character of H.G. Wells. It's interesting they're creating a spinoff when last season's cliffhanger left her in a state of, is she a good guy or not? But the apparent setting that they'll be using is so set far in the past, mm-hmm, that the current continuity really doesn't matter. So they can just kind of ignore that and play it off as, well, what got her to this point. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, cool.
Last story here. Young Justice, the hit Cartoon Network series from Warner Brothers Animation, will come to DVD for the first time on July 19th with Young Justice Season 1, Volume 1, which will contain the first 4 episodes of the series, which is great. I'm waiting for the box set because I love Young Justice.
I was just going to say the same thing. I hate when they do this Volume 1 or Season 1. It's like, you know what? Can't you just wait till the season's over and then put them together in a box set? Or, you know, better yet, it's filmed in HD, or at least up converted to HD and widescreen. Why are they putting it on a DVD? Why can't they put it on Blu-ray? Maybe they're waiting for the full season, but it's like, I don't want to buy a 4-episode collection. I mean, I understand they're marketing towards more of the kids. They probably figure, you know, kids aren't, mm-hmm, going to have that much money in the parent, but I just don't like that, you know, season one, volume one type thing where they put them out 4 episodes at a time. It's like, whatever, just put out the full season when it's done, like any other TV show. But yes, I do love Young Justice. Definitely one of the continuing DC's awesomeness in the cartoon realm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Young Justice is great. I am waiting for the season 1 Blu-ray. I do hope it does come out on Blu-ray, because I agree, they film it They create it,
yeah,
in an HD format, so I would love to have that in Blu-ray as well, because it's worth, especially animated things are worth having on Blu-ray.
Yeah, see, it's funny. A lot of people say, like, they don't notice the difference in animation on Blu-ray, but I can immediately see, like, the much clarity and much more detail in the animation than if you just watch on regular DVD, but I guess that's just me. But
absolutely.
Yeah, so, no, and you too, I guess. But yeah, there's a lot of people like, animation on Blu-ray is, like, not worth it, and so whatever, but.
All right, well, that's the end of the news block. So before we go into the commercial, I am going to leave you with a poll question. Hopefully I'll get some responses this time. Brian and I will talk about the TV upfronts when we come back from the break, but which new network show are you most looking forward to? Please send your answer to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. As we come back for break, like I said, we will go into the TV upfronts. We also have a spoiler room discussion of Thor. And as we go into break, I'm actually going to play you a song from the upcoming punk band American Alligator. The song is called I Meant It. If you want to check out more of their music, you can go to americanalligator.bandcamp.com. And I play this mainly because, well, A, I like it, and B, I'm buddies with the lead singer, so enjoy. you shop on Amazon.com? Would you like to support the Geek Generation while shopping on Amazon.com? Great, because you can do both without spending any additional money. All you need to do is visit www.thegeekgeneration.com and find the Amazon button on the front page. Click the button, do your normal shopping, and check out. You've spent no additional money, but you have earned us a commission. Please make this a regular part of your Amazon.com shopping routine.
Hello, Taryn Southern here, and you're listening to The Geek Generation.
So hot.
I love you.
We are back, and as I mentioned prior to the break, Brian and I are going to talk about the TV upfronts. For people not familiar with the TV upfronts, this is basically when the networks come out, they invite all the advertisers, and they show previews of all the new shows they're planning on. This gives advertisers to put their money into the commercials before these things even debut. Yes, it is a bit of a gamble, but I'm pretty sure the upfronts allow you to purchase things cheaper since it is in advance than waiting for ratings to come through. But the best thing about the upfronts is that it does give us an idea of what we can look forward to as far as TV goes, or what we cannot look forward to, as is usually the case. But Brian and I will basically go network by network down the line and give you an idea of, we're not going to go over everything, but just the things that we're interested in and that we think are worth watching. So if we start off with ABC, Brian, what are you looking forward to?
First of all, this is going to be kind of a, I'm not really looking forward to it, but I wanted to bring it up. The show Once Upon a Time that they're doing, which is sort of like a fairy tale type thing. I think this is going to turn into a litigation type thing, because a couple years ago, ABC bought the rights to that Fables comic book that DC does, which is exactly pretty much the exact same premise of this. And it looks like they just took the premise and changed the name, and no one involved in the comic book is getting credit for it.
Interesting.
So I don't know what's going on, but when I read that, I'm like, whoa, and this was like years ago, so I think it could be an interesting show, but I'm wondering what's going on there. So it's not exactly the same, but there's definitely, you know, living in a fairy tale world with all the fairy tale characters type thing. It's interesting. So, but anyways, I just want to get that away. But
sorry to cut you off, but just
since you're talking about it,
I'm on the fence about this one. But the thing that I do like, it stars Jennifer Morrison, the girl who's currently playing Zoe on How I Met Your Mother, if people are familiar with that. It is kind of an odd premise, but there is some mystery there, so there is potential for it being interesting. I'm just really scared that they're going to fall into a trap of like trying to do a different fairy tale each week, and it's just going to end up being annoying.
Well, I just want to put this out there as a blanket statement for all TV shows. My problem is with all these shows is if I can, I try to get interested, but then in the back of my mind, I'm always going, well, you know, what happens if it gets cut off after like six episodes?
Right,
you know, that's always in the back of my mind. So I try not to get too attached to anything. But out of ABC, the only thing that really stood out was Last Man Standing, which I thought had a good cast. Got Tim Allen. It's got, I love him. I love Nancy Travis from all the way back from So I Married an Axe Murderer, and other things. So, and it just looks like it has a pretty good premise. I don't know if I'll watch it, but it at least had some sort of things that made me go, okay, that seems like it could be a funny show and a good casting, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah, Home Improvement was an amazing show back in the day. It's one of my dad's favorite shows ever of all time.
Mine too. My dad too.
Yeah. It seems like the older guys really like Tim Allen because he's that throwback to like the macho and the manly. And that's kind of the premise of this show too, is that he has a family, he has his wife, and he's moving from a show of Home Improvement where he had three sons to Last Man Standing where he has three daughters, which I thought was kind of interesting. So it's now the man trapped in the woman's world and trying to keep it manly.
Yeah.
And this is Tim Allen's big return to ABC and to television in general. So I think I'm going to give this one a shot and see how it is, but I'm kind of excited for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to do well, actually. I mean, he's got that drawing power, and I think, you know, like you said, his return, he's been away from TV since Home Improvement. So I think it's going to be a pretty good gamble that they're probably going to make out good on, I think. You never know, but.
Yeah. CBS, give me one of your shows that you're looking forward to.
Oh, gosh. There was only one, and that was, it's not even really looking forward to it. I honestly was looking through their thing, and nothing really popped out of me. Just because I think Kat Dennings is attractive. I was like, two broke girls, I'll watch that. No, I won't watch it, but I don't know. It just seemed like a lot of the same. The only one that popped out at me kind of was the one that J.J. Abrams has a hand in, which I just dropping.
Person of Interest.
Thank you. I was like, I can't.
Yeah, this is the one I'm really looking forward to. And probably out of all the shows that have come out of the upfronts, this is the show that I'll be watching. J.J. Abrams and Jonathan Nolan are two of the executive producers. There are more, but those are the names that jumped out at me. So right away, that seems like a win. It stars Jim Caviezel and Michael Emerson from Lost. And it's interesting to see that J.J. There's another show we're going to get to that J.J. Abrams is a producer on that also has a former cast member from Lost. So I found that very interesting. But Michael Emerson is an amazing actor. For the premise here, a presumed dead former CIA agent is teaming with a software genius who invented a program that uses pattern recognition to identify people about to be involved in violent crimes. Using this information, they try to figure out the person of interest and stop the crime before it happens. So there is a bit of a Minority Report element coming in through here, but I think the premise is great. I love the actors involved. I love the production team. So this one is one I'm definitely watching.
Yeah, it does sound like a great premise. And those names right there. It's like you said, John Nolan and Nolan. John yeah, Nolan. I was like John Nolan. I wanted to say Christopher Nolan, but I know his brother. him and J.J. Abrams. You know, you gotta give it a chance at least. You know, with that star bracket of names on there. So I mean, yeah, I definitely. That was the one, besides, you know, honestly, that was the only one that really stuck out of me on CBS.
Yeah.
There was like, I was just like, I don't know, the rest of the stuff just seemed, they really had, they're actually the number one network right now, so they didn't really bring in a lot of new shows. They kept a lot, obviously, because they're doing so well, they kept a lot of what they already had.
Yeah.
So they didn't really need to do a big overhaul, so there wasn't that much new anyways, so.
You mentioned Two Broke Girls, and the preview wasn't phenomenal, but it does star Kat Dennings, who's awesome, and it's also produced by Whitney Cummings, so I think that makes it worth a look.
Oh, okay, I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
All right.
Which is interesting because not only is J.J. Abrams producing for multiple networks, but Whitney Cummings is producing this show for CBS, and meanwhile, we'll be talking about, I hope, well, I will, her NBC sitcom that's coming out, too. Yes. So we have a lot of people that are in multiple networks this year. The last one that I looked at that CBS that was somewhat interesting, and it had a good premise, but I doubt I'll actually get into it, is a show called Unforgettable. It's about a woman who has superior autobiographical memory, and she's a cop. Now, this is a real thing. If people think that this was fictionally created for the show, it's not. Only 6 people in the USA have this gift, one of who is actually a celebrity. I don't know if you're familiar with who that might be.
No.
That's okay. Mary Lou Henner from Taxi.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was on 60 Minutes about this. She has what they call superior autobiographical memory. You can give her any date of her life, and she can tell you what the weather was, what she was wearing, what she did that day. There is no moment in her life or her experiences that she will ever forget.
That's crazy.
It's pretty amazing. Like crazy. It's a pretty amazing thing. So to kind of work that in with a cop show, it's cool that you can see like someone recall those kind of details and everything. But you can see now there's going to be a drama side, because while that seems like a tremendous gift, there is also a curse that goes along with that, because you can't forget the bad things either. So interesting. Anything else from CBS that you were looking forward to before we move on?
Not special.
Okay, just checking. Let's go to the CW then. Anything gripped you here?
Nothing that gripped me, just the fact that Sarah Michelle Gellar is making a return to the CW, aka WB, which where her career pretty much got started with Buffy, and she's in the old Angel's time slot. And it's called The Ringer, and I kind of was reading the synopsis, and I'll read just the first paragraph because it's kind of so hokey that I'll watch the first episode and then I'll just be like, I can't watch this. But so Sarah Michelle Gellar stars as a woman who, after witnessing a murder, goes on the run, hiding out by assuming the life of her wealthy identical twin sister, only to learn that her sister's seemingly idyllic life is just as complicated and dangerous as the one she's trying to leave behind. Bridget is 6 months sober and starting to turn her life around when she's the sole witness to a professional hit. Basically, shit goes down, and she has to go back and move in with her sister. And basically, Sarah Michelle Gellar is playing dual roles in this. I don't know if she can pull it off, but the preview looked okay. But it definitely looks like one of those CW geared 14 girls drama type thing. And I'm just like, I don't want to watch this, but I'm going to give it one watch just because of Sarah Michelle Gellar and my love for Buffy. But I don't know. She's been off the radar for a long time. She just had a kid and now she's trying to get back. And of course the entire trailer is just promoting it as her return to television, like not even talking about the show really. So that doesn't give you much hope. And the rest on CW, was pretty bad. I mean, this, the Secret Circle, which is all about witches, is terrible. There's so many terrible shows. And, you know, it's like, I still don't get why they wouldn't have just done a spinoff of Smallville and just put it in the same time slot, because they would have had the same audience.
Yeah, or anything superhero-based, because they have that fan base there already.
They moved Nikita to Smallville's time slot, and so I don't know. It's just, it looks like it's completely, you know, female-based, and that's fine. I just don't, with the exception of Supernatural, which seems to be the only holdout of, like, normal TV series that used to be on the CW, so I don't know. It's just, nothing on CW for me.
Yeah, nothing really gripped me here, but I do feel obligated to mention Heart of Dixie, because Jamie King, who we talked about earlier, is in that. Her last TV project, My Generation, really only aired like two episodes. They had six, and they did release all six eventually, but they'd only had two episodes before it got canceled, so I'm hoping that for her sake, she has better luck with Heart of Dixie.
True.
So I'll encourage people to watch that, even if I don't know if I will be, but I will encourage people to watch it. I don't think it's necessarily my bag, but...
No, I don't think so.
But congrats to Jamie King anyway.
Yeah.
Fox, give me a show from Fox that you're looking forward to.
Again, this sounds like a sexist buffoon, but Zoe Deschanel is like so cute and bubbly, and I would watch anything she's in. So that show New Girl, which definitely does not look like up my alley, I may check it out just because she's in it, and I'm pretty much drawn to anything she's in. And it doesn't look horrible, but does kind of look like a not catered to me kind of TV show.
Sure.
But the only other thing on Fox was the J.J. Abrams. Is that the one where he had the other one he produced?
Yeah, Alcatraz. This is also from executive producer J.J. Abrams. The Lost character in this one is Jorge Garcia, who is Hugo from Lost. And he plays an Alcatraz expert and a comic book enthusiast, was in the description. So I'm thinking maybe there are going to be some references in here for our kind. The premise here is that all the prisoners of Alcatraz were reportedly transferred off the island in 1963 when the prison was closed, but that never happened. The reality is that over the course of one night, they all vanished, and decades later, one inmate reappears unaged and goes on a killing spree with an apparent agenda, and he won't be the last. So there's people slowly surfacing from Alcatraz that all vanished over the course of one night. I think that's a really cool mystery, very J.J. Abrams-sounding premise. So,
Exactly. Definitely J.J. Abrams-sounding.
I
think it's going to do very well. I just have a beef with Fox because they always cancel the shows I really like.
Yeah.
All the way back from Firefly, Dollhouse to Terminator. They've always shit on the shows that I like, and yet it seems like any other show gets like a long life on that channel.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to Alcatraz, I think. I think that's like the only one that really, you know, stood out as a good premise I thought that's going to actually work, I think. And I would hopefully, you know, I think it's gonna last, I would think. It seems the premise is strong enough to last, you know, seasons.
Yeah. Sam Neill's in this one too, so I like him
surprised.
From Jurassic Park.
Yeah, Park, yep.
Another show that I'm kind of on the fence about is Terra Nova, which has been being talked about for a long time. This is a Steven Spielberg produced thing, and it's a cool looking show. But I don't know. I think this is one of those ones I have to wait and hear some feedback from people before I really start to invest myself into it.
Yeah, I had the same reaction to it. Like, I saw and I'm like, wow, that looks really visually really cool. And, you know, but I'm just like, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to have to see and wait and see what the buzz is about it. And, yeah, it just, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to, you know, it wasn't a, oh, my God, I'm going to definitely check that out type thing.
I think
thing,
it's a big gamble, too, because with, like, dinosaurs and stuff, there has to be a big special effects budget. So this show has to do really well if it's going to stick around.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to talk about Fox-related is something that you and I mentioned the other day briefly, and that's the fact that Seth MacFarlane is bringing back the Flintstones.
Oh, my God.
Now, I can't say I'm going to be watching this. I'm going to check it out of curiosity. But what the hell are they thinking?
Seriously, like, you know, come on. The Flintstones is like an American institution. That show was like one of the all-time greatest cartoons of all time. And you know, I have no faith that Seth MacFarlane is going to treat it as that. He's going to do the same. He's going to make it outlandish. He's going to try to bring all sorts of sexual and like pushing the limits to it. And you know, I can't believe whoever, I don't know if Hanna-Barbera still has rights or who, but
I don't understand why they would ever give that to Seth MacFarlane, because that just seems like a terrible fit. And it's going to be all like, I can't imagine. That's like my worst nightmare. And I'm not saying Seth MacFarlane's not talented. If you give him the right thing, but why would you give him the Flintstones? Just, that does not compute with me at all.
Yeah, I have a fan that he was just a fan of it back in the day. And basically he has power with Fox, and he can say, hey, I'm going to do the Flintstones.
Yeah.
And Fox said, okay.
Yeah, he pretty much controls their animation on that. I mean, there's no one else. I mean, The Simpsons, besides The Simpsons and Bob's Burgers, he's pretty much running the show, with the exception of the couple of new shows they're adding, like the god-awful Napoleon Dynamite cartoon.
Yeah. By the way, someone was talking trash in the comments about Bob's Burgers on the site, and I don't care what anyone says. Bob's Burgers is one of the funniest new shows on TV. I love every episode of it.
The only people were talking trash about somewhere else that I read, but I think they were saying it was funny, but they said the animation wasn't up to snuff. But I'm like,
that's part of the humor, I think.
Yeah. They were just like, why would this have this crude animation style? And I'm like, I don't know, because they want to differentiate it from everything else,
right?
You know, so
they don't want to do it all in Flash like every other show.
Exactly. So you can have it like made 6 months in advance.
Yeah. NBC then.
About Seth MacFarlane. Yes.
NBC.
I actually got quite a bit from this, and none of these are like ones that I'm going to definitely watch, but just, the Playboy Club I will not be watching.
No.
It's got Amber Heard in it.
Yeah.
So I was just like, okay then. But, no, I will not be watching.
That's the biggest temptation there, but yeah, I don't think that's enough to make me watch it. Although, I don't know if you heard this. They actually, like, granted it's NBC, so you're not going to see any nudity or anything, which Amber Heard is big on in her movies and everything, but a lot of the people did sign nudity clauses, so there is a good chance that they're filming stuff that will come out uncensored on the DVDs.
All right, I'll buy that now. I'll buy that for $1.
Just saying.
I'll keep that
I feel mind. It's my responsibility to inform people of these things.
The other show that I would not be watching because it doesn't really look good, but it bothers me because it has some great talent attached to it, and that's Free Agents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got Anthony Stewart Head, who played Giles in Buffy, who is a fantastic British actor. And it's also the writer on it, John Enbaum, wrote for Veronica Mars for a number of years, and he's a fantastic writer. So, but the premise just doesn't grab me.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it's funny that like it's got that talent that I like in it, but I'm probably not going to watch it.
See, the premise here doesn't grab me, but I love Hank Azaria. I think he really
deserves. Yeah,
the guy's a comedic genius, and well, I don't know if I'm going to go as far as genius, but he's comedically very strong, and he's never really gotten that live action role that he deserved, because we've always seen him do his best work and voiceover and things like this. So I have a feeling this might end up being like the next Arrested Development. Granted, the premise doesn't grab me necessarily, but the preview was hysterical.
It's like I said, it the premise doesn't grab me, but I'm going to keep it in mind because, like I said, it's got, you know, great writing and it's got some great actors in it. So, I don't know. Whitney, of course, is my next one,
mm-hmm.
which I did not even know existed until you told me about it. But then I was reading up on it and it looks hilarious. And I love Whitney Cummings. Yes, that's her real name. She's not a porn star.
I know. That's always the joke that she likes to use in her stand-up and stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah, she's a stand-up
She's
comedian.
Getting
she's
huge
hilarious.
Right now because, like she we
is,
said... Not only this, she's executive producing Two Broke Girls, and she has been one of the standouts as an interview on the Howard Stern Show over the last couple of years. So every time she's on, I'm excited for her to be on. She's been kicking ass in the roasts. Her stand-up's going well.
I was going to say the roast really, I think, is what brought her through
definitely.
To the mainstream. Yeah, like a lot of people. Like that's when I first started hearing about her besides Stern. But yeah, exactly. So I'll be checking that out. Lastly, I don't really know about the premise. It sounds kind of cheesy. Grimm, which again is sort of like a fairy tale type thing with the big bad wolf and, you know, these humans that are a group of hunters known as the Grimms. It's all about like the Grimm brothers, Grimm mm-hmm. fairy tales. But attached to it is the executive producer, David Greenwald, who co-created Angel with Joss Whedon mm-hmm. and also wrote a bunch of episodes of Buffy and Angel, and also another executive producer, Jim Koff, also did Angel. So right there, that makes me want to check it out, although there's no actors in it that I even know of, and the premise does sound kind of but that right there, I saw David Greenwald, and I was like, okay, I might have to check this out.
This is a definite monster of the week type show.
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't know. I I wanna like it, but I don't think it's gonna. I'm gonna. But it's just got. It pains me to see people that I love doing things that I don't know.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
So those are the major networks, but there are a couple other things I really wanted to just mention real quick. One of which, and I only go into this because I'm more interested in the show. I wasn't necessarily looking at the network as a whole. I've seen previews for a show called Franklin and Bash, which is a courtroom comedy, I should say. Probably a dramedy, I would guess it's going to go in that direction. But it stars Mark Paul Gosselaar and Breckin Meyer, and I love both of them. And their That's boss fantastic. Is Malcolm McDowell. So as a whole, yes. This sounds really strong. This is on TNT. It starts June 1st, I believe, which is Wednesday nights.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to be checking this one out.
I didn't even know that existed, and that shows you how much I pay attention to these things.
I actually saw the previews originally in the movie theater. So those like trailers really? That they show beforehand, yep, I was yep, like, wow, yep. That looks really funny. I'm going to check it out.
I was wondering what happened to Breckin Meyer besides doing Robot Chicken.
Yeah. The other thing is some trends I noticed between the networks this year. There's three particular trends that I picked up on between similarities with shows between networks. So you always wonder, like, how did this happen? Did they pitch it one place and then the network said no, no, no? But then when the person walked away, they created it something similar. Like you said, like Once Upon a Time, maybe being based loosely off that. Fairy Tales is definitely one of those premises. So you have ABC's Once Upon a Time. Then you also have NBC's Grimm, which you just mentioned,
yeah.
Which are both, they're taking a slightly different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
But that theme of the fairy tales is there. So I found that kind of interesting. The theme, which I don't know where this came from, like Evil Southern Bells. ABC has a show called Good Christian Bells.
I saw that, yeah.
CW has Heart of Dixie. So again, that same idea seems
odd.
It's
kind of weird.
It's a random one to kind of surface out of nowhere. And the last one I can understand a little more because of the popularity of Mad Men. They have two different almost Mad Men style period piece shows. You mentioned NBC's The Playboy Club is definitely one of those.
Yep.
And the other is ABC's Pan Am about the Pan Am stewardesses.
Yes.
And again,
yes.
it's that same theme of going back in the period piece. Mad Men did it successfully, so let's look at a glamorized version of these other period pieces.
I think it's just interesting to say, I mean, this is completely different what you were just saying, but it seems that the networks are kind of just scrambled to catch up with what I think, you know, they're noticing that the cable networks, the premium cable channels, or even the regular cable channels are putting out better TV shows than the networks, mm-hmm. which used to be the other way around.
Right.
I mean, you look at Showtime with Dexter, with Californication, with Shameless, you know, HBO with Game of Thrones, True Blood, all these shows that are fantastic and blow anything that's on the network out of the water. And so I think the networks are starting to get weary going, oh crap, you know, people are paying for these channels to get these shows and we're giving, you know, pretty much free networks and where our shows aren't doing as well, like, you know what I mean? So
yep.
It's starting to, you're starting to see the ideas trickle down now to the networks going, oh crap, we need to, like, because, you know, the only thing that seems to be working at the network consistently is the NCIS and the Law and Orders and, you know, how many freaking spinoffs of those can you eventually, and they're still going strong, but I mean eventually that's going to run dry, I think. You never
absolutely.
Know, but
yeah, no, I totally agree with you. As we get out of our, do you have anything else to add to the upfront discussion? Okay, no, I'm just asking before
was,
we move on.
No, that was
okay. Before we move right out of it, I'm just going to remind people of the poll question. We went over the stuff we're looking forward to. For me, Person of Interest is the one I'm looking forward to the most. Which new network show are you most looking forward to? You can send that answer to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration. You can go based off of the things that we discussed, or you can check out the sites. Each official site for each network does have a fall preview rundown, so you can check out the stuff there if you want. It does take a little time to go through everything, which Brian and I did, but we wanted to be very thorough for everyone. So
yeah.
Again, which new network show are you most looking forward to? podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. You can send your answers to. It's just about time to step into the spoiler room, and we haven't done this in a while, so I'm sure there are some new listeners out there as our ratings have been increasing slightly a bit from week to week. So I just want to remind people that once we step into the spoiler room, we will be talking about Thor, and we will be talking very openly about Thor. This is not just a review. We're going to talk about specific things in the movie. And if you haven't seen it yet, we're probably going to spoil some things for you. This segment is really
probably everything.
The spoiler room's designed for people who have seen the movie and want to talk about it with their friends or just listen to us talk about it. So basically we can have an uninhibited conversation about it. So if you haven't seen Thor and you don't want it ruined, this is your time to tune out, and I'll say goodbye to those people right now. You can always come back later and listen to it. But with that said, Brian and I are going to step right in.
Dun, dun, dun.
Access granted. Welcome.
All right. We are safe and sound. Yes, in the spoiler room. I had to do a lot of spring cleaning because I don't even remember the last time we stepped in here. I think it might have been for Scott Pilgrim. And that was, episode 9 or something?
Last year. Yeah, it was like last July or August.
Yeah. So, I originally saw Thor in 3D, as did you, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. We have both seen it in 2D since then.
Yes.
And what is your take on the difference?
I liked it a lot in 3D, but it's a completely more eye-opening experience in 2D, which makes no sense, I know, to a lot of people. But the 3D glass just sort of make it darker, I think, mm-hmm. and just harder to make out. And, you know, the 3D effects were added after the effect, and I actually know someone who worked on Thor, who was at the wedding last weekend that we attended, that was explaining how they basically just added the 3D stuff after the effect. They did rotoscoping to just add it. It wasn't filmed in 3D, so you're not really missing anything. You're missing, like, oh, look, the buildings in front of you look like they're in 3D, and oh, look, the hammer maybe once will look like it's flying towards you. Like, there's not a lot that you're really missing, and basically the movie studios just want to be able to... I paid $15 to see it in 3D, which was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, the Blu-ray is probably going to be $20 when it comes out, so it's like, it's annoying. And then I saw it in 2D for like $8, and I was like, wow, I actually enjoyed it better in 2D. So yeah, if you can, I would suggest seeing it in 2D. The problem is, obviously, most movie theaters want you to buy it in 3D, so there's not... I had to do a search pretty much to find a theater that was showing it in 2D, and there was maybe like two theaters in like a 45-minute radius of me that were showing it in 2D. So but it was worth it.
Yeah, the first time I saw it in 3D as well, and it wasn't by choice. I didn't want to see it in 3D. I had no desire to see it in 3D.
Yeah.
Movies like this, they don't have to be seen in 3D. 3D is a function that should be used by directors sparingly when they have a particular reason to use it. And it's just a gimmick for making more money now, like you said. And I originally went to the showcase in Randolph because I was meeting some friends there. And that's all they had. I didn't have a choice. So no. I did see it again last night, and I went to Bellingham, and they had the option of 2D or 3D. So I definitely went to see 2D. And just like you, I enjoyed it way more in two dimensions because, again, there's no need.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I really recommend it. It's a lot. You can see things clearly. I just enjoyed it. You're not missing out in 3D. So if you get a chance to see it in 2D, but where do you want to start with?
We can basically start anywhere. I mean, what's your take on the movie as a whole? Did you like it? Did you hate it? Were you in between?
I really liked it. There's been a pretty much general consensus, I think, overall, that most people generally enjoyed it. I thought it was below Iron Man 1, but better than Iron Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of in that upper echelon. I thought it was and it worried me very much beforehand because, you know, this is the first time you're taking a character that's not Earth-based superhero. You're taking of Marvel. You're taking, you know, into the magic realm of like in gods. So I thought they did a fantastic job of explaining that and doing it and still, you know, trying to ground it at the same time. And I just thought it was a really, really well done. They kept pretty close to the comics, but not, they took things here and there. They picked in, but again, it was Thor. And I thought, first of all, Chris Hemsworth did a fantastic job for pretty much a not well-known actor, for the exception of people who are like, oh, he played Kirk's dad in Star Trek. That's pretty much what he's known for.
Right, right.
For an Australian, he did an amazing, he just had that presence. I thought that like a really, you know, you see him and you can picture him standing next to Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans as like the big three Avengers. He did, I thought, a really good job. And he also, you know, could act too. It wasn't like he was just a muscle bound oaf running around. Like, I just thought, and you know, 10 years ago, if you told me they would make a Thor movie, I would have pictured a really cheesy, you know, almost like, I can't describe it, like Masters of the Universe 1987 live action running around, like really cheesy movie. There's been people who said some stuff about the special effects. I thought they were pretty well done.
Yeah.
They weren't the greatest, but, you know, they didn't, you know, their Marvel is, was funding this themselves. They weren't, yes, they're owned by Disney, but Disney didn't fund, this was already in production before that. So the only difference, you know, from a comic book standpoint is in the comics originally, when Stan Lee wrote it, when Odin cast Thor out of Asgard and sent him to Earth to be taught humility, he placed him into a partially disabled medical student's body named Dr. Donald Blake. Mm-hmm. And basically that was to teach him his, and you know, and he had a cane, and when he struck his cane down, he would transform, the cane would turn into a hammer and he would turn into Thor. And that was the basis of Thor. And in this, they sort of took away the secret identity, which I agree, because it would have kind of, they didn't have time to explain all that, and they did their little Donald Blake jokes in there.
Right, I like that, how they had the name tag on the shirt and all that. Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, they did that, and I just think it would have been a lot cheesier if they did it that way. And, you know, even in the comics, they've gone back and forth with the secret identity, so I don't think they really need to. And, they changed in the original comics. Jane Foster, a.k.a. Natalie Portman's character, was a nurse, which obviously made more sense then, but now, you know, they made her into what obviously they needed for the movie, and it made a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. One of the big negatives I heard from people was they didn't buy the love story between Thor and Jane Foster. And I don't know, I didn't have a huge problem with it, but I can see it seemed like, yeah, he was on Earth for like 3 days, and all of a sudden he's like falling in love with this Earth woman, mm-hmm, forever, and vice versa. But I didn't have a huge problem with it. Maybe it's because I'm partially biased because I love Natalie Portman.
I know. Who wouldn't fall in love with Natalie Portman?
Exactly. And I want to mention also Kat Dennings was fantastic as the comedy relief. Mm-hmm. What else?
One thing I'm going to mention in response to the love story thing is I'm going to give a quick shout out to Paper Keg. You can check them out at paperkeg.com. I read a really interesting article on Thor, their Thor review and their thoughts on it and why it could have been a better movie. And it was one of those things where you come out of Thor and you're like, wow, that was really good, but something's just not sitting right, and you can't always put your finger exactly on it. And the article was basically to say that the error with Thor is that there wasn't enough time, and not even in the sense that the movie wasn't long enough, in the sense that things didn't have enough time to develop on Earth. He fell in love with Jane Foster very quickly. He pulled a 180 and learned his lesson, learned humility very quickly, all in the matter of 2 or 3 days. And what they could have done to easily solve this would be to have a time differential between Asgard and Earth. So saying that one day on Asgard was perhaps a month Earth time, Thor could have been gone for 2 days and Thor could have been on Earth for 2 months. That's plenty of time for all those things to happen. Not only that, but it would have also made more impact when something like the Warriors 3 came back down to Earth. So Thor had seen these guys, what, yesterday? But if he had seen them after 2 months thinking that he would never see these people again, the impact of that emotionally is a lot different.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. But I, as far as the, you know, learning humility, I thought they actually did a very better job in the movie showing him learning his humility than they did in the comics where, you know, I bought it. Like, he thought his father was dead. Mm-hmm. He thought he had, you know, pretty much started a war that he didn't mean to. And, you know, I thought I bought it, like, hook, line, and sinker. Like, and in the comics, they did it a little more clumsily with, because back, of course, was back in the 60s, but, and over time. And I thought they did pretty good. I understand, though, it was very fastly done, but I thought with what they had to work with, they did a pretty good job. My standout, in the entire movie, though, I thought was Loki. I thought, the actor escapes me for the
Tom
moment.
Hiddleston was amazing as Loki.
Amazing as Loki. The fact where he played it, that he, you never, at the beginning, you're kind of, he always, you never knew whether to trust him or not, and that's the perfect thing.
I mean,
thing
we did, Loki. But.
Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Right,
for
right.
The average movie, yeah, he played it so well, and even to the point where he really didn't really do anything that bad. He just wanted to be loved and appreciated, and, you know, he they played it in a way that he wasn't like a, yes, he, you know, he set the destroyer armor down to destroy Earth and people on Earth, but, you know, he wasn't like, and yes, he tried to kill, you know, all that stuff, but it was all done in his mind. For, you know, that's the best villains, that, you know, you can see where they're coming from, type thing. And I think it was very important for him to, get a good for the actor to do really well in this role, because obviously, for those who don't know, he's the main villain in Avengers. So for him to make an impact in this, I thought was a fantastic, good thing for it to happen. And, you know, setting him up for Avengers is perfect because, you know, I can see him being powerful enough to be able to take on, you know, the whole team. And of course, that is in the original Avengers number one. Loki was the one who brought them together. Mm-hmm. So, my biggest geek out was, of course, Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah. Jeremy Renner showing up out of nowhere.
A lot of people didn't know. I don't even think that A, that was Hawkeye. B, that was Jeremy Renner. It was so underplayed, and they didn't even cast him in the credits.
Right.
I mean, they didn't credit him in the credits. But I just love the scene where he's like, Barton, grab your gun. And you just see him, like, hovering over the gun, and then you see him grab the bow.
Absolutely. And I knew as soon as he grabbed the bow, fuck yeah, Hawkeye.
Yeah. And then it was fantastic. And, you know, if that's any indication, he's going to be fantastic. I loved it. Anthony Hopkins was unbelievable as Odin, better than I even expected. I shouldn't have doubted it, but I mean, he had a lot more to do with the movie than I thought. I thought he was going to be sort of in it for like 10 minutes, yeah. And then, you know, that's it.
And it's funny, too. I've said this as a joke in the past, not on the show, I don't think, but amongst friends, that I've never seen something, a mass media production Thor-related, where they don't include the Odin sleep. It's like something they do every time they show, like the movie, the animated movie, like that was Hulk versus. They did it.
Yep,
they did it in this movie. They do it all over the place. It's always something they use.
The only thing, speaking of Odin's sleep, that I wanted to speak about, I don't think they really explained it well to the general audience. Where all of a sudden he's with Loki and he sort of collapses,
right.
And you're not like, what? Why did he collapse? And all of a sudden they're like, he's in the Odin's sleep, and they didn't really explain that he has to do that every so often to recharge his you know Odin force. They didn't really explain that. I think that was lost on a lot of people, which I think was their only really big misstep.
True.
In the logic and continuity of the movie. I thought the acting surprised me, like the part where, you know, Loki and Thor screaming at each other, or like they really get animated to that angry level, mm-hmm. where you like, that's true acting. Like, you rarely get that in superhero movies where, you know, I bought it and it didn't really feel cheesy to me.
Oh yeah, I love when Loki was screaming out like, is it crazy? Is it?
Yeah, exactly.
So good.
Exactly. And a good thing is I didn't, you know, a lot of people complain that either, I've heard mixed from other, either they said there was too much Asgard or too little Earth, or, you know, I didn't think there'd be that much Asgard of as there was in the movie. I thought most of it was going to take place on Earth, which apparently I was wrong. And I didn't really have a problem with that. I mean, I thought they balanced it pretty well. Yes, the Earth scenes were kind of not as developed as I thought they were going to be, but and the climax did feel a little rushed. Mm-hmm. I thought, where it was sort of like, okay, and then he gets his hammer, and he's going right back to fight Loki, and you know, but I just thought, you know, him versus Destroyer was one of the greatest thing, you know, him spinning his hammer like he does in the comics.
Oh, yeah.
Just like lots of freaking amazing.
The battle with the Frost Giants was awesome, and they came up with really inventive ways to use the hammer.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, just fantastic, and you know, the Frost Giant stuff, and all, they did a lot of cool stuff, and you know, I think a lot of people are, the people who didn't like it are just looking for things to bitch about, because I mean, yes, there was slight you know, slight negatives to it, but nothing that, you know, I thought it told a great story. I thought it did, although it shows you, I mean, it did not do the greatest at the box office. It did really well, mm-hmm. but not to the level, which I think shows you that, of course, you know, he's not one of Marvel's biggest, you know, and he was going to be a hard sell anyways. I mean, I'm sure Captain America is going to do like double or triple.
Right.
The business. The problem is, though, I mean, the good thing is they just needed this to establish him, because now once he's in Avengers, you don't have to go and be like, oh, who's this Thor guy? So,
yeah, it's interesting that we look at these movies on their own, but we can also just say, well, this is a primer for Avengers. Like,
yeah, if this was just a standalone, then I'd be like, okay, maybe, you know, they dropped the ball a little bit and, you know, I don't think there's going to be a sequel. But, you know, since this was, you know, blatantly, again, on the road to Avengers, I mean, and I heard I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard a rumor that Joss Whedon actually wrote and directed the post credit scene with Loki.
Yes,
and the Cosmic.
I heard that
and
as
everything.
Well.
So I don't know if that's true or not, but a lot of people did not know what the Cosmic Cube was. I had explained to a bunch of my friends who even read comics, had no idea what the Cosmic Cube was. And to the people out there who don't know, it's basically a reality warping, powerful tool that is obviously cosmically powered, and obviously they're setting it up that Loki is going to get control of it in Avengers, and that's going to be why the Avengers are going to need to band together to stop him before he destroys all of reality. And I do believe that it is also a link to Captain America, because I believe that it is going to be either the Red Skull, someone's going to have it in Captain America, and it's going to somehow fall into the hands of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
back in the day. So it wasn't very clear. I think that was probably the worst post-credit scene out of all of them so far, but just because people didn't understand what was going on behind it. But yeah, I think once...
Well, all the post-credit scenes are really for the geeks anyway.
Exactly. But I mean, you know, like Iron Man 2, you know, you see Thor's hammer, people are like, oh my God, it's Thor's hammer, or Nick Fury. Like, this one was sort of just like, oh, that's...
I was expecting to see, honestly, something Captain America related, because that's the next one in line.
Yeah, I think that they the Cosmic Cube was pretty much that only thing, and no one really knows that that's even linked to Captain America. So yeah, I agree. I thought it was going to be something Captain America related as well. But I don't know. If overall, I thought it was I'd give it like 3.5 stars out of 4, maybe. I mean, 3 to 4 stars out of 5.
Yep.
I think
I ended up giving it a 9 out of 10 in my review. So I really dug it. I did see a couple issues with it. Like you said, I think I'm in that same camp of it's not as good as the first Iron Man, but it's better than Iron Man 2, and it's in that same general range for me. Just to go over some of the Easter eggs really quick, because I noticed a lot of like little references here and there. We already mentioned Hawkeye, Jeremy Renner showing up in there. We knew he was going to be Hawkeye. We didn't know necessarily that he was going to be shown in Thor, so that was really cool to see.
Yeah.
There was the mention of Bruce Banner without using him by name.
Yes, yes.
The doctor, his name escapes me right now.
You know, the older doctor that was
mentioned a friend of his that was doing gamma radiation research.
No one had heard from
him. He got taken by S.H.I.E.L.D. and no one's seen him since. That was a cool little mention. One of the things I thought was really funny, but totally escaped me the first time I watched it, after the battle with the destroyer and everything, and Agent Coulson shows up and starts talking to Thor, and Thor's like, well, if you want me to be an ally of you, you need to return all of Jane's equipment and all that stuff. Thor referred to Agent Coulson as Son of Cole.
Did he really?
Yeah, because they use, like, Loki, Latvi-son, and Thor, Odin-son.
I never realized
that. And so he called Agent Coulson, he called him Son of Cole.
That's kind of nice.
I thought that was really funny. And then as he's flying off, Coulson, like, yells after him, you haven't been debriefed yet.
A couple for the real geeky people. The first guy, do you remember when the hammers first lands and that guy comes in a pickup truck? He's a ball.
Oh, JMS.
Yes, that's J. Michael Straczynski, who actually helped write the movie, which I didn't even know until I was in the theater. He has had a huge Thor run last couple of years that was pretty epic, and there's a lot of his stuff in this movie that and I thought it was cool that they gave him a big cameo. Of course, Stan Lee had his cameo. And at the end, in Asgard, the Feast, another huge Thor writer who I think wrote it from 1983 to 89 or something, Walter Simonson, who one of the legendary Thor writers, he was sitting next to Lady Sif in the
interesting, I didn't see that
dinner table. He's a red bearded gentleman but he was definitely in there, and that was cool to see him in there too. I like how they played homage to these Thor writers, the important Thor writers of, you know, trying to think what there was another, was there another Easter egg? In the trophy room.
Yeah, I was wondering what the hell those things were. I'm sure they were things that people would know, but I didn't know.
The eye, giant, weird-looking eye thing, is the Eye of Agamotto, which is the thing that powers Doctor Strange's magic.
Gotcha.
Also, the Infinity Gauntlet is in the background, but they didn't really show
it. Oh, I didn't even notice it.
It's very hard to see. Apparently, it's like right after the two soldiers get killed by the destroyer.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to like basically freeze frame it to see it. But they had the actual prop at San Diego last year.
Yeah.
So
we knew it was going to be in Thor and then never saw it. I didn't
really. So I think they scaled it back. But yeah, so the Infinity Gauntlet was in there. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I don't think there was anything else that I can remember. But there was a bunch of, you know, little Easter eggs for the fans, as I love the Marvel movies always do. I can't think of any others.
Yeah. Not Easter egg related, but something that we just when we were talking about great performances, I was thrilled with Heimdall.
Oh yes.
I thought he was very strong in the movie.
Yeah, he had like a very strong presence, like just just a presence, and that, you know, in the comics he's always had that, and, you know, I was worried in the movie he was just always going to be a guard standing at, like, the Rainbow Bridge, but he was just great. A lot of people were bitching that they changed, you know, basically in the comics they didn't have that giant orbital space bridge.
Right, to launch the Bifrost.
To launch the Bifrost, yeah, you basically just went off where you wanted to, but of course, you know, for the movie it made a lot more sense to do it that way, but of course the hardcore fans are like, how dare they, you know, whatever.
I thought they were really smart about the way they created not only the Rainbow Bridge, but also the Bifrost.
Yeah, and, you know, I was worried, because, you know, in the comics the Rainbow Bridge is really a rainbow, and they did it very well to make it look realistically like, you know, an actual bridge, mm-hmm. but giving it rainbow color as opposed to just a giant rainbow.
And even when the horses were stepping on it, you could see their tracks illuminating and everything.
Yeah, because I was worried it was just going to be like, you know, they could have just done the CGI, like, rainbow, mm-hmm. you know, like in some movies, and, you know, they really, you know, they put a lot of work into it, and, you know, I just thought, you know, I would never in a million years dream that they would have done a Thor movie, like, that well done, you know what I mean? Like, just, he's such a different character in the Marvel universe. He's not this typical Marvel superhero, and I thought they did, for what they had to work with, you know, great acting, great directing, great writing, and yeah, it didn't do fantastic at the box office, but Marvel's already saying, yeah, it did like ginormous numbers overseas.
Yeah, it was something like 240 million internationally before it even launched here.
Exactly. It already surpassed, I think, Fantastic Four and, like, a bunch of other movies internationally. So I'm sure, I guess the plan they're saying now is for Avengers, I mean, Captain America, then Avengers, then Iron Man 3, then a Thor mm-hmm. 2.
Then and then a Captain America 2 already, yeah.
Yeah, they're just like, it's. Meanwhile, DC has Green Lantern, and I don't know if that's going to work. So
yeah.
Yeah, I know. And Batman and Superman. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, bottom line, if you haven't seen it, I think it's worth seeing. I know it dropped to number 3 this week because that's Pirates. Ugh. But actually, Pirates, I want to bash Pirates for a minute. It had its lowest opening out of the entire 4 movies.
Good.
Which I think is hilarious considering they, and of course, people are blaming because they ditched the two other actors. But I'm like, the whole movie's based on Johnny Depp and they still couldn't sell it. Like, you know, that's sad. But yeah, it still did, you know, 100 million, but it was not close to any of the others, so that's I'm sure Disney's not too happy with
good
that,
maybe
so,
they'll finally give it up.
We love the Pirates movies, can't you tell?
Any other Thor thoughts before we start closing up and wrapping up?
Not really. I'm just trying to think of the only problem with Thor is it's going to be hard to do a sequel because I don't know how to really do another. You know, he has a good rogues gallery, but it's going to be interesting to see how they approach the sequel. I don't know how they would, but that's a long way away. So, I mean, it doesn't really have to, you don't have to really worry about it, but I'm just, you know, already thinking in my head, you know, that's how I am. I'm already thinking, what are they going to do in the sequel? But
I do like the way they ended it, where he's stuck on Asgard and the Bifrost has been destroyed pretty much.
And they needed to do that because, you know, Natalie Portman obviously is not going to be an Avenger, so they couldn't have him be like, I'm going to see you again, I'll be with you, and then she not, like, show up. So they needed a way to, you know, pretty much get her, for now, I'm sure.
Well, we don't know for a fact that she's not going to be in Avengers.
I'm pretty sure. She may be, but I
wouldn't be shocked at a cameo, because you would think if he's getting down to Earth, because he's going to have to for the Avengers, that's going to be one of the things on his list to do, you know?
True. Last question is, a lot of people bashed Natalie Portman's performance and thought she phoned it in and thought she was not very well. It did not do very well. What did you think of her performance?
I don't think she phoned it in. I think the role didn't call for her to go that crazy with it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can watch Black Swan and then watch this, and yeah, it's like, yeah, it's not the same Natalie Portman, but I mean, you know, let's be honest, this is, she has what she has to work with, and, you know, you're not gonna go, like, you know, all Shakespeare, well, I should say Shakespearean.
Yeah, it's Kenneth Branagh, but
yeah, but you know what
I mean. Yeah, but what is, like, she gonna, you know, do with it, honestly?
It wasn't a meaty role.
Yeah, it was what it was.
Like, yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like, people are like, oh, she phoned in, and I'm like, okay.
Whatever. If anything, I think she was just wasted by the role.
I agree. To a certain extent, yeah. I mean, they could have pretty much put anyone in there, but at least we knew, you know, she's a good actress. And I thought they had chemistry. People said they had
no
chemistry.
No, they did. They
I don't
did.
Know about that. I thought, yeah, I did. So that's my final thoughts on it. If you haven't seen it, go see it. If not, definitely when it comes out, it's definitely worth the purchase, I think, on Blu-ray. I'm sure it will look fantastic on your home TV mm-hmm. sets if you have an HDTV. So
absolutely.
Looking forward to Avengers and Captain America.
Ditto.
So Captain America's first. So.
All right. So as we're wrapping up the entire episode, not just the spoiler room, is there a final thought or something you would like to plug?
Yes. Actually, yesterday I finally opened my own Twitter for Graphically Speaking, and it is at Graphic Speaking. because I couldn't fit, won't let me fit the whole thing.
Oh, yes,
in there.
The Twitter character limits.
So if you would like, if you do enjoy my podcast, please follow me on there so I can get it kind of, because I'm going to start posting, you know, stuff on there too. So if you like my podcast, please follow. I would appreciate
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
So that's, and the Macho Man episode, bonus episode, should be up sometime this week.
Fantastic. Well, then, as always, I ask everybody to please share the show on Facebook and Twitter. Let's get the word out. If you want to see any of the articles, the things we talked about, any of the videos that I'll be putting in the show notes that were the web finds and stuff like that, you can go to thegeekgeneration.com. On the button, there is, or on the button, on the side, there is a button to subscribe in iTunes where you can rate the show and please write a review. There is also a donation button on the side to send us money. And if you have any questions, comments, insults, or topics you would like us to discuss in a future episode, please send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. If you'd like to submit an article to the site or an audio file to this show, please send those to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I'm @TheNightAngel, Brian's @XanderHarris. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site is also on our site. Wrapping up a very jam-packed episode 37. We haven't had one this long in quite some time, but I feel like we got through it in actually relatively decent time.
37?
37.
In a row?
37. Oh, that's a comeback right there.
Yes, good stuff.
All right, we will see you guys next time. Later.
Peace.